Hello and welcome to this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. As promised, as Rex is vacationing this week ahead of the Paris Olympics, we have a new guest host for today. It is Golf Channel insider Todd Lewis. And Tilu, before we get into the players and the themes and the memories from your 2024 major season, I understand that you had a chance to play Royal Troon the day after the 152nd Open Championship. Were you able to emulate Xander Schauffele's final round 65?
No. Man, it is a hard golf course. And I played alongside my colleagues from the Golf Channel, including our own Johnson Wagner, who has become a live front legend. And they played all the way back. I was one tee up, which wasn't that far up. Man, that's a hard golf course. I did knock it to 8 feet on the postage stamp.
Wow.
And missed the putt, but lift it out. But I mean, you make the turn. I mean, 10, 11. I mean, there's a reason the first six holes on that golf course are called heaven. The second six holes are called purgatory. And the last six holes are called hell. But it was a good walk. Had a good time.
Did you have the prevailing wind? In other words, the front nine was easier, and then as soon as you make the turn, you're just getting kicked in the face the entire time.
You know, interestingly, we didn't have a lot of wind, but we had some rain when we started at 6:40 a.m., walking with our bags on our backs, and I'm closer to 60 than 50, so, man, I mean, that's a load for me. I don't know about you, but I feel like such an ugly American when I go over there because we ride in carts over here mostly. But I woke up the next day, which was Tuesday, to get on a flight, and I my body felt like it went through a D1 college football practice. I'm like, oh my God, please. So I didn't.
Luckily, you were not squeezing into 33C. As Golf Channel does take care of. Golf Channel does take care of us in some of those international flights. I'm curious from your experience. I mean, you've covered the Open for a while. You always bring your clubs. How do you like Royal Troon as a golf course, playability-wise, compared to some of the other courses that you play on the Open Rota?
I mean, if I was a better player, I would love it. I mean, I'm a single-digit handicap, just barely, but I do enjoy it. You got to avoid the pot bunkers for sure. I think St. Andrews is a better golf course for me. It's not as long. You know the golf course a lot better. But if the hardest course in the rotation, in my opinion, is Carnoustie, for sure. Maybe the easiest is St. Andrews. I think, you know, Troon Roll is right there, kind of in the middle.
Tilu, you are the consummate professional. You are very objective. But I am under strict instructions for this podcast that if ever you drift into TV Todd mode, if you evade a direct question during this podcast record, you will be hit with this noise.
Okay.
I don't want to have to do that because that is incredibly annoying. But I do want to start this podcast with the Open because that's obviously freshest. In our minds, just a couple of days removed from that. Xander Schauffele, again, 65 to nip Billy Horschel and Justin Rose by two shots. All of a sudden, Tilu, he's become the second best player in the world, arguably the player of the year in 2024. We'll get into that in just a second. But what did you make of Xander Schauffele's transformation over these past couple of months? Where before the PGA Championship, he was viewed as this player who was very good, not yet great. Had a hard time sort of summoning the moment. What do you make of him now as standing here as a two-time major champion?
You know, I talked to him after he won the Open, and he was standing there holding the claret jug, and I asked him that same question. I said, what do you feel like you have elevated this year that has you crossing the line more? And he said, his father, Stefan, has been his coach since he was a kid. He relinquished the reins to Chris Como. They altered a minor little thing in his swing that gave him a little more confidence. You combine that with the fact that he said he went into the gym more. He's become stronger and longer. And suddenly all those incremental things were just the little component that was missing. And he started seeing some positive results. He said he really started feeling it at Wells Fargo. Now he lost to Rory McIlroy there, but he said he felt like he was in complete control of his game. And basically from that point on, he has been a consistent threat in just about every start that he's had. So I do think that he really has installed that tiny little bit of belief that he needed. And, you know, and he's got a heartbeat that generally is around 45 to 50. He doesn't get too upset. He's the anti-John Rahm, not that there's anything with John Rahm. I think he's going to be a consistent power now for the next 5-6 years.
It is amazing to see that sort of uptick in self-belief, because Xander Schauffele was still a very accomplished player on the PGA Tour before May. I mean, he'd won a half dozen PGA Tour events. He had an Olympic gold medal where he kind of held off a hard-charging Roy McIlroy, who shot 61 that day in Tokyo. Like, he had accomplished a lot, and yet there was still sort of this lingering doubt as he entered his age 30 season whether he could take that next step. He has certainly elevated it, and now, Tilu, he finds himself in sort of this two-major club where you have John Rahm with two majors, you have Bryce DeChambeau with two majors, you have Justin Thomas with two majors, you have Colin Morikawa with two majors. They're all sort of in this tweener group, mm-hmm. right, of 26 to 32. They're a slightly different generation than the Rorys and the Brookses, and yet they're still older than sort of these up-and-comers where you see like a Ludwig Åberg. Like, there's not much crossover between those two, those sorts of subsection of players. So where do you put Xander Schauffele now in that group of two major winners, specifically Rahm, Bryson, Justin Thomas, and Morikawa?
You know, that's a good question. I do feel like as of now, I feel like he has, from what I have seen over the last few months, the most potential. I do think that. I do think because, you know, you mentioned Brooks and Bryson and John Rahm and those guys. I mean, look, I'm not here to slam Liv, but those guys aren't facing the quality of players week in and week out that the guys on the PGA Tour are. So I feel like Xander is, from all the things that I've mentioned and that confidence and that belief, I think that he has probably the better potential to get 4, 5, maybe 6 major championships once his career is over from that group that you mentioned.
Isn't it interesting though, Tilu, because a couple of months ago, Xander Schauffele had all these top 10s in major championships in his career. He had 11 top 10s in the majors entering the 2024 major season. Now, all of that experience, all of those results are cast positively. Like they were just a springboard for this success. When you look at the totality of his career now, he has 15 top 10s in major championships. That major championships, that's more than any of them. I also left out Scotty Scheffler of this two major club, and I'd be curious to get your thoughts on that sort of comparison now. But rather than being cast as missed opportunities earlier in Xander's career, now that the trophies have sort of caught up with it, the totality of his career makes you wonder, is this a player who in the next year or two could pick off the career Grand Slam? You look at what Xander Schauffele has done in the other major championships, in the Masters, 4 top 10s and 7 career starts. In the U.S. Open, 7 top 10s in 8 career starts. He's never finished worse than 14th. We're looking at a player, potentially, who could pick off the career Grand Slam next year.
Right. I mean, you know what's interesting about this, Lab, and I love your take on this too, is when we were talking about Xander Schauffele, I mean, his last win prior to this year was in 2022, at the Genesis Scottish Open. From that point until he won this year, we really didn't criticize him a lot because he established residency in the official world golf ranking top 10 because he was so consistent. It wasn't like, oh man, he's failing. No, he's failing. It was kind of like either consciously or subconsciously in the media or with fans or maybe even within himself, it's inevitable. And when he wins, that is the thing that is going to unlock tremendous, not potential, but just validation that he is an incredible player. And I think that we have finally crossed that or turned that corner now with Xander Schauffele. And he's going to be dangerous over the next 2 or 3 years for sure.
I know why we do it, because we have shows to fill. We have podcasts to record. We have stories to write. Like,
got to fill the black.
We have to talk about something after every round, after every event, after every month, after every year. But I do think Xander Schauffele is a perfect case study of why it's always dangerous to criticize players or write off players for not winning enough. That when you look you know, when you zoom out at 30,000 feet or you give them 3 to 5 years, you look at Xander Schauffele's resume now, you're like, boy, this is amazing. He's got two majors. He's got 15 career top tens and major championships. He's won an Olympic gold medal. He's won more than a half dozen events on the PGA Tour. Like, that's an outstanding resume. I think it's a good reminder with these players, particularly of this age, you know, that sort of 26 to 32, to just give them a little bit of time. Up on NBCSports.com/golf right now, Todd, I laid out the argument for why Scottie Scheffler versus Xander Schauffele is actually a pretty compelling debate for Player of the Year in 2024. I know we do not have to vote right now on July 24th. If you had to, though, which way would you be leaning as we head into the Olympics, which, of course, is not an official PGA Tour event, but will certainly hold some sway with the membership as well as the FedEx Cup playoffs? Which way are you leaning?
Yeah, you know, look, Xander Schauffele, for all the reasons that we have talked about, is an incredible talent. And he is the latest and greatest winning the Open. But I still think the edge is Scottie Scheffler right now. If you look at where Scottie has won, when API, the Players, Masters, RBC Heritage, the Memorial, and I'm missing one, Travelers. So, I mean, those are all signature events with the exception of the Masters and the Players. I mean, he has strong fields there. I just feel like that he has proven himself to be a stronger player. I mean, look, top five's got 10 top fives compared to 7 top fives for Xander Schauffele. He's got 14 top tens compared to 12 top tens for Xander. So I mean, it's a close race, but I think that right now Scottie Scheffler is still the player of the year. And if I had to vote, I would vote for Scheffler.
It is amazing. And it's sort of the point that I laid out, in that in no other world, like conceivably, would this even be a discussion. Like, this would have seemed preposterous in April, May, or even at the end of June, that a player like Scottie Scheffler, who became the first player since Arnold Palmer in 1962 to win 6 times before the calendar turned to July 1st, a player in Scottie Scheffler who, at least through the first 15 events of the year, compared quite favorably to Tiger Woods' 2000 season in terms of wins, in terms of top tens, in terms of scoring average, and the like. And yet, I think there's still going to be a significant portion of the PGA Tour membership that's going to vote for Xander Schauffele. And I do think the vote, when the players eventually do vote in December, will be a referendum on how they view sort of major glory versus the weekly dominance that Scottie Scheffler has experienced.
You know, else I think it's going to be a referendum on the Players championship, because, you know, I consider this is me, and I know this is a totally different debate we can have another time, but I do consider the Players right up there with a major championship. I really do. I mean,
the PGA Tour has been weakened, Todd.
That's true.
The PGA Tour has been grossly weakened by the emergence of LIV.
But yes. Okay. All right. That's true. But I still think it's an elite event where you have. And who did Scottie Scheffler beat in that championship? Came from 5 shots back to beat Xander Schauffele at Wyndham Clark
by 1. Exactly. Yep.
So, but, I mean, he was 5 down. I mean, and that takes a lot of guts, whatever you want to call it, to come from come back from 5 down heading into the final round. So, I'm interested to see what the membership votes for, but I got a feeling right now they still would vote for Scottie Scheffler.
I do love that it's a storyline. I do love that it's something that we can now discuss over the next couple of months. Again, although the men's Olympic competition is not an official PGA Tour event, I do think players are going to view that quite highly, even if the field is not of a typical strength of like a signature event on the PGA Tour. I do think playoff performance is obviously 100%. Going to come into question. Keep in mind, Scottie Scheffler has won 6 times on the PGA Tour this season. He will enter Eastlake in the Tour Championship, most likely, assuming he's in that number 1 spot, with just a 2-shot lead, which can evaporate with 1 bad swing off the opening hole. I even think, Todd, I know players shouldn't, but I do think, because of recency bias, a player's output at the President's Cup could serve as some sort of tiebreaker if it comes down to that. If Scottie or Xander go 5-0 and are just sort of the dominant force for the American team, I don't know. In the event of a dead heat, I'm saying if it's a dead heat, let's say Xander Schauffele wins the FedEx Cup and players are really torn. You got Scottie Scheffler winning the Players Championship. You got Scottie Scheffler winning the Masters. You got Scottie Scheffler winning 4 other signature events. You got Xander Schauffele winning 2 majors and a FedEx Cup title. If players are truly torn, just from a recency bias standpoint, and one of those players, either Scotty or Xander, have a 5-0 week and clearly stamp themselves as the best player at Royal Montreal. I'm not saying it should. I'm saying it could help influence the vote in sort of a tie-breaking situation.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of could see that argument, but at the same time, most of those matches, with the exception of the final day, are you're with a partner. And if you are the dominant force with your teammate going up against your opposing duo, then okay. But come on, that's generally unlikely. I mean, I would be shocked if that happened.
You don't think Scotty Scheffler throwing down 9 birdies a day against Siwoo Kim and Sung J.M. will turn some voters' heads?
Yeah, absolutely. If he is the dominant player, if he goes 9 birdies, if he's shooting his ball as hard, we can't measure it with foursomes, but if he's playing a 4 ball and he shoots 64 in his own ball and 64 in another session in his own ball, yeah, absolutely. But it's hard to measure that when you got foursome action, when you got alternate shot. But we'll see. I mean, I tell you what, if Xander Schauffele does win the FedEx Cup, it's a dead heat in my mind. Who gets it?
I can't wait to see. It does give us something to look forward to over these next couple of months. I know a lot of golf fans' attention now turns to NFL training camp or Major League Baseball postseason runs. For us, the golf space, we have the Olympics and the FedEx Cup playoffs, all three of which, of course, are on NBC. And you will be a part of. Tilu, speaking of Scotty Scheffler, let's go back to the Masters in this 2024 major recap. Another Scotty runaway turned what was a very close final round with Kyle Morikawa, Max Homa, even Ludvig Åberg in the mix, instead turns into a Scotty runaway for the second time in 3 years. What will you remember most from Augusta this year and Scotty Scheffler's performance?
Okay, this is going to surprise you when I tell you this. Yes, he played beautifully. But when he walked off the 18th green and was walking to scoring there at the clubhouse, he trotted towards Phil Kenyon and grabbed him and picked him up. Phil's not a big guy. And picked him up and gave him a great hug, and Phil was super excited. I mean, that's going to stick out to me because Phil Kenyon turned a guy who was 162nd in strokes gained putting last season, still was the player of the year. Just think about that. And then transformed him to, I would say, probably close to an average putter on the PGA Tour right now, statistically, but one that has a lot more belief than he had last year. And getting on those greens that we all know are diabolical, and for him to putt as well as he did, putt as well as he did at API and so on. I feel like that was the moment when he started working with Phil Kenyon and things started to click. And it was so appreciative that Scotty was towards Phil Kenyon and vice versa. That's going to stick out for me because that's what made Scotty Scheffler, his putting, his positivity on the greens. That's what made Scotty Scheffler Scotty Scheffler in 2024.
That's funny, Tilo. That's exactly what I wrote on that Sunday night from Augusta National, where I think sort of the selflessness of Randy Smith, Scotty Scheffler's longtime swing coach, to bring in another voice. There's no ego involved. Like, this is a team that gets together and just wants to bring the best out of their prized pupil. That's exactly what Phil Kenyon had done since they began working together after the Tour Championship in fall 2023. And look, Scotty Scheffler is still a streaky putter. All you need to do is look back at Royal Troon and what happened there to see, that he's still going to have good weeks and bad weeks. What was he, 136 in strokes gained putting at Troon? He had the four putt from off the front of the 9th green that sort of torpedoed his chances to win the Claret Jug this year. But by and large, Scotty Scheffler has at least neutralized what was an outstanding weakness, has given him a lot of confidence. He looks like an entirely different player as we sit here in July, as opposed to in February.
And I will say this about Royal Troon. I do think if you look at what Scotty has been working on with Phil Kenyon, a lot of that work has been done on very fast Bermuda greens. And that's something, again, that he is a little, still, even though he is better, he is still, in my opinion, a little fragile when it comes to confidence with his putting. And when you get on a surface, like the greens there at Troon were 10 to 10 and a half, generally on the PGA Tour, they're 11 and a half to 12. That's what he's used to, and that's where he's established this belief over the last year or so. So when you get on a surface that's a little different, I think he's a little challenged right now. He needs to be a little more comfortable on those lower speeds.
And he's certainly not the only player who no. struggles with that adjustment. I do think there's probably something to be said for playing the week ahead of time at 100%. The Genesis Scottish Open, as Xander Schauffele did, and former winner of the Scottish Open a couple of years ago. Take us behind the scenes, Tilu. I know this is sort of the insider edition of the Golf Channel podcast with Rex and Lab. What is your week like at Augusta National? Because of all the rules, because of some of the media restrictions, obviously we can't go inside the ropes. Some of the player access is a little bit limited. What is that week like from your perspective as a Golf Channel insider working for Live from the Masters, trying to gain insights into these players and their teams and relay that to the general public?
Well, I mean, I want to hear yours as well because you are an equal insider. But I mean, it's hard. It's hard. It's definitely hard. I mean, first off, I don't know how you feel, but we, just like the players, are measured on how we perform at major championships, because those get the most attention. I mean, the most eyeballs are generally on Golf Channel during the Masters, to be honest with you. For the other major championships, I'm not far behind. But that week is challenging because, as you know, we do not get heavy access. We're not entitled to walk inside the ropes where you and I can do that and get a lot of information. I walk a lot of practice rounds with players and talk to them, get some insights. And we're not allowed on the player practice area. We can't walk on the range. We're not supposed to be inside the ropes in the putting green. So what I do, this is insider information. The media center, for those watching, is at the back of the range. So players are hitting towards the media center. And it's far from the golf course. So I leave the media center. I tend to walk down to the player practice area where they're hitting balls, try to grab a player as they're walking from the practice area to the cart that's going to shuttle them to the clubhouse. Then I'll walk to the clubhouse. I'll walk into the player locker room. I'll walk up. And again, I'm just trying to snag any player I can. And I'll find them. I found Rory and Colin and, you know, in the locker room. Then I'll go under. There's this big giant tree, if you've been to the Masters, that's in the back of the clubhouse where a lot of stuff happens. Generally, I'll see coaches, agents, you name it there. I'll try to get some info there. And then I'll walk back down the first fairway and do that loop about 10 times a day. And I'm just trying to catch players. And, you know, and it generally works. But it's challenging. I do a lot of my reporting too via text or calls, which, you know, helps as well. But, you know, it's tough trying to gather the inside information on probably the biggest event of the year. But even it's rewarding when you do it.
And even the phone calls or texting is a challenge, because those agents, those coaches, those team members don't have their phones on site either. Right. They're just like everybody else, or just like any other patron. They do not have that access. It's certainly a challenge. But it's one that we always look forward to. I think it makes, I know from a writer perspective, right? Like, I think it makes my job even more rewarding if I can pull it off. If I can sort of overcome all those obstacles in the reporting, in the accessibility, and still bring you a game story in which you had something that you didn't already know from watching the CBS telecast. Like, that sort of makes me feel good on Sunday night. And I'm sure with your reporting, as well as your sit-down interview with the Masters champion each and every year, that's sort of like a high point of the year to me as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, you and I feel like we got into this industry to service our viewers. I mean, people click on golfchannel.com or NBC Sports. You know, they're not just goofing around on the internet and stumbling across those websites. Same thing for TV. People aren't just going through to Bravo and you know, ESPN, blah, blah. Oh, look, it's Golf Channel. I'll just stop there. No, they go there. That's a destination channel. And I feel like, you know, it's a beautiful responsibility to service our viewers, our readers, our listeners, whoever you want to call it, to give them the most critical information that they can have to enjoy the product.
Todd, another reporting question for you as we transition to the PGA Championship, because the focus once again was on Scotty Scheffler, even though he tied for eighth that week. Think back to Friday, May 17th. There was a lot of chatter, a lot of commotion, a lot of complaining that Golf Channel was not on the air while the Scotty Scheffler arrest news was breaking. I don't think you were necessarily in the spa all day. you know, cucumbers in your eyes, getting a face mask, getting your toes rubbed down. What was that day like for you as we tried to make sense of an unprecedented situation with Scottie Scheffler getting arrested before the second round of the PGA Championship?
Well, I remember around 6:45 to 7 sometime a.m. in that period that my phone started to vibrate off the nightstand in room 344 at the Marriott in downtown Louisville. I'm like, what is going on? And so instantly you're worried about your family because you're away from them. So I pick up my phone and I've got this abundance of text messages. And one of them, you know, the first one I read was from my supervisor, my boss, and said, Scottie Scheffler, been arrested, fatality. And I'm like, wow, that's generally vague. So I start trying to figure out what's going on, and I turn on ESPN and looking around, and I'm like, wow, he's been arrested. And so I worked my way up to the Golf Channel via local news stations in markets across the country. And so I immediately turned on local news, and they were talking about this story, and then boom, Scottie Scheffler's mugshot appeared. I'm like, wow, this is for real. I got up, got dressed, threw a hat on. The police station, the police headquarters, was two blocks from our hotel. That's where Scottie Scheffler was taken. So me and a couple of my colleagues started walking, hoping to get the perp walk, if you know what that means, when the person who's been arrested walks out, you know. And so I was going to get my phone for the perp walk of Scottie Scheffler, and I can't believe it. I was like, this can't be real. But he went out a side door, but I got some information from talking to the local NBC reporter. I reached out and talked to the local assignment desk for the NBC station there. Gave me some insights and all these stuff that's called PIO, public information officer. You know, that's what we deal with in the news industry. So I'm like, wow, this is really happening. So I then go to Valhalla. This is actually kind of funny. I go to Valhalla, and NBC News with Lester Holt wanted to do an interview with me for the nightly news. And so I go into this auxiliary building. It's not the clubhouse. And I walk in and I see these very big muscular guys with jackets on and things in their ear. And I'm like, what's going on here? And one of the workers for the PGA of America said, hey, inside in a meeting right now is the mayor of Louisville, the governor of Kentucky, Seth Waugh, the outgoing CEO of the PGA of America, and the lawyer representing Scottie Scheffler. And I'm like, oh my, well, this is a big deal. So I go up to this other room to do my recording or interview with NBC News. And as I'm done, I'm not leaving that building until I find out what's going on. I hear in the room next door, the walls are kind of paper thin. I hear this conversation. Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. We'll be there Tuesday. Yes, Your Honor. We're going to plead not guilty. I'm like, well, that's the lawyer. So I waited and waited and waited until finally the lawyer, who I've never met, his name is Steve Romines, I didn't know his name, never seen his face, he walks out, and I go up to him, and I have yet to meet a high-profile defense attorney that doesn't want to go on TV. And so I went right to him and said, hi, Mr. Romines, my name is Todd Lewis with NBC Sports and the Golf Channel. Can we ask you a few things about Scottie Scheffler? And he said, absolutely. And he came out and gave Scottie's version of it while he was still playing golf. He was playing golf at that moment. And, you know, he said, one of the big things is that he said, I asked him, I said, will there be any plea here? Well, and he said, no, we are not going to have any settlement either. They're going to prosecute us with the charges that are presented to us, or they're going to drop them. And I think that was a big thing. That was the first time we heard him say that on camera or to any reporter. And, but yeah, that was my day. And then talking to Scottie after, who I think he handled himself beautifully after that round. I mean, it was a crazy day. It was a very crazy day. One of the most, you know, unforgettable, and I've had some pretty wild things happen in my 18 years at the Golf Channel. That was one of the most unforgettable days of my career.
That's where I wanted to, I mean, that's where I wanted to go next, Tilo, because I don't want to overstate this and say this was the craziest day that you've ever had in your career. You covered the hydrant. You covered the Tiger crash in 2021. You've covered other sports as well prior to getting to the Golf Channel. Where does that rank in terms of bizarre, surreal, sort of nerve-wracking to try and report and find out all the facts? Where does that rank for you personally?
I think Tiger hitting the hydrant in Orlando and then all the things that came after that, you know, his press conference at Sawgrass and the international hysteria and the scandal, I think that was the craziest for sure. in my opinion. But probably considering who it was, Scottie Scheffler, who I feel like anybody on the property of Valhalla, if there's one person that was not going to violate the law, it's Scottie Scheffler.
And that's like the most amazing part still.
That's what I'm saying. That's what's amazing. He is arrested and charged with a felony while trying to get to a golf course to exercise his craft. That's probably number two, right behind the hydrant. It was bizarre.
That Friday, I think, told us a lot about Scottie Scheffler. His ability to sort of compartmentalize, his ability to sort of withstand some of the emotional tumult. I mean, shooting 66 in that second round to place himself just a couple shots back heading to the weekend after literally getting arrested and spending about an hour in a holding cell was unbelievable. His press conference, which you alluded to, like the grace, the humility he showed, expressing sort of his condolences to the man who lost his life earlier that morning, expressing his gratitude for the Louisville Police Department and the officers who took what he said were very good care of him in those sort of stressful hours. Like, I thought that moment will stick with me as the moment of 2024, and just I think was a better glimpse into who Scottie is as a person, more so than anything we've ever seen from him inside the ropes.
But I still think it cost him the championship, though. Because if you remember that Saturday, even though he finished tied for eighth, that Saturday he shot 73. I'm going on memory. I think that's right. He shot 73.
First time all year that he shot over par in a round.
And we reported this at Live From, and I had a chance to talk to him after his round. I don't believe he went to the media center. I don't think he talked. Maybe
correct.
He did.
But,
so I think so. Yeah, no, he didn't. Because I went and found him, and I said, "Hey, everything okay?" And he kind of in a voice and a look of fear said, "Hey, I before my round, I talked to my lawyer, Steve Romines, this morning for about 30 minutes, and wow, they're charging me for a felony. They think that I assaulted a cop." I mean, he's like, he was just, you know, just taken aback. And it was a high, high distraction for him that day. And so, yeah, I mean, if he shoots 68 that day instead of 73, you know, if he wasn't arrested and he didn't have that distraction, we'd be talking about Scottie Scheffler maybe as a two-time major champion this year.
I mean, can you imagine what the dialogue would have been had Officer Gillis not been there? Had Scottie Scheffler gone on to win the PGA Championship over Xander Schauffele and Bryson DeChambeau? Had he then begun 2024 with the Players' Championship, a Masters, the PGA, and then heading into the U.S. Open at Pinehurst? I think that'll be one of the great what-ifs, certainly, of the year, if not in recent memory. Speaking of Pinehurst and the U.S. Open, Tealy, where Scottie was a non-factor, said he really struggled off the tee, sort of visualizing where his shots were going to end up with all those sandy waste areas outside the fairways, finished outside the top 40, his worst result of the season. I think we had the tournament of the year. The Bryson DeChambeau, Rory McIlroy duel, Bryson DeChambeau winning his second U.S. Open title and first since 2020 in the COVID U.S. Open. To me, those were not even comparable events in terms of electricity, in terms of interest. I mean, there was no one at Wingfoot because of COVID. At Pinehurst, it actually seemed, and Rex and I got into a spirited discussion about this, whether Bryson was actually the people's champion, where people were actually pulling for Bryson over an immensely popular player in Rory McIlroy. With your boots on the ground, you experiencing it yourself firsthand, was Bryson actually the most popular person on property, which would have seemed unthinkable a couple years ago?
I think he was at least equal on that Sunday with Rory McIlroy, for sure. I think the fans understand the baggage that Rory has, not winning a major championship since 2014. So there's a sympathy towards Rory McIlroy. And there's obviously Rory McIlroy has this tremendous likability as well. But I don't think, probably since Phil Mickelson, at least in his prime, we have seen a better showman on the golf course than Bryson DeChambeau. Now we can, you know, is this calculated? Is this genuine? I think that's a little bit of both there. I think he genuinely does love golf. I think he does understand that being more of an entertainer is going to increase his brand and his popularity, which is something I think he feeds off of. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I'm not sitting here criticizing him. Everybody's got their own way of doing things. But Yeah, I mean, I think that there was a very large camp rooting. I heard it, I saw it, rooting for Bryson DeChambeau. I mean, Bryson is a needle mover. He's a meteor still. I mean, I know he's not playing on the PGA Tour, but probably of all the live players, he has done the most, in my opinion, to make himself noticeable, relevant out on the world stage. And for him, he smiles a lot. He enjoyed himself at Pinehurst. He ran around with the trophy so everybody could touch it. I mean, it's a wild scene, but I mean, he is a force. There's no doubt about it. He proved it there at Pinehurst.
You mentioned the word showman, and I was not, I had not gone down the rabbit hole of Bryce DeChambeau's YouTube channel, despite how often he pushed it in his press conferences. All you need to do to understand Bryce DeChambeau and how he now behaves on the golf course, all you need to do is look at the video that he posted with former President Donald Trump and now the Republican candidate for this year. Again, this is a no politics zone. I'm not getting into the politics of this, but watch that video and you understand how Bryson now views live events, how Bryson now views major championships. He was engaging. He was full of energy. He had so much enthusiasm. He was a captivating watch. Bryce DeChambeau is all of that and more when you go watch him in 2024. The lessons that he has learned from YouTube and content creation that way is translating in a way that I think a lot of PGA Tour players do not understand. Where
Yeah,
there's so much
what do you think
focus
his
on the
lessons are?
product now, like there's so much focus on the product now and being more than just a great competitor. You know, there's more than just being the stone-faced stoic player like a Patrick Cantlay, who has always just assumed that excellent golf is going to take care of everything. Bryson, I think, is one of the few players in golf who understands the dual responsibility of being both an entertainer and a great competitor. He threads that needle better than anyone, and I think he proved that in 2024.
And that is a learned thing from him. I mean, that is something that is not in him. He had to learn that because when he even admits this, when he was immature and kind of acting like a jerk, he said, I did that. That was based on his entire identity as a person being related to how he performed in the golf course. And for first off, golf is golf. You're never going to be perfect all the time. Secondly, he had some injuries. And so he wasn't playing well for quite a while there. And that obviously frustrated him and turned him to an unlikable character. But I think now he sees live and YouTube channel and all this social media stuff where he feels more complete, not necessarily as just a competitor, but also recognizable, as you mentioned, as an entertainer. And I think that gives him fulfillment. And I think that has created the maturity that we have seen on the golf course. Now, hopefully, I'm not wishing, I definitely don't wish any player to go into a hole or a valley. But if he starts playing poorly, I'm interested to see how he reacts there. If he can stay mature, stay patient, stay calm, and try to fix things.
All of the skeptics or the cynics in the situation who say that Bryson's act is not genuine, it's not sincere. My response to that has always been, I don't care. I don't care. I don't care if it's not, I don't care if it's calculated. Like Bryson is making golf more compelling to watch,
Yes.
whether it's calculated, whether it's sort of this elaborate PR plan to rehabilitate his image. I really don't care. I would much rather see Bryson than a vast majority of the PGA Tour players. Kudos to Bryson, who I think was certainly the entertainer of the year
Yeah,
in
and I will say,
2024.
I've been on the planet quite a long time. I can tell when someone is just not a nice person. I think generally Bryson is a good person. I think he just does things differently with the one shaft irons, being the long drive guy. Now he's got irons with bulge on the face and he's all these other weird things that he's doing. And I
Different is
just did
scary. People don't
different.
understand different.
And it was scary to him a bit because he wants that outside validation. There's an insecurity when he brings that out there that this is going to work. And I feel like over the years now he's gotten it. And I think that has added to his maturity. But I think in his heart of hearts, I think Bryson's a really good guy.
Tilu, how about the other protagonist of that U.S. Open at Pinehurst with Rory McIlroy? The three bogeys in the last four holes, didn't talk to the media afterward, got off in a huff. Did that result And the way that Roy McIlroy lost that U.S. Open, forfeiting a two-shot lead with six holes to play, does that result make you more or less confident that Roy will win a major in 2025?
Oh, that's a great question. Laugh. I mean, it's incomplete. I don't know if I could answer that. If I had seen a better result from him at Royal Troon, I could probably have a little more clarity. But him missing the cut handily makes me wonder that he can win a major in 2025. I mean, it's interesting. And I know you have too. You know, you talked to Rory McIlroy. I've covered him going into major championships since his last win in 2014. It seems like it's not about mechanics. It's not about strategy. It's about where is his mind and where are his emotions. I've talked to him where he says, I'm going to treat this like any other tournament heading into a major. I've talked to him where he said, I'm going to embrace the enormity of this major championship heading into a major. I've talked to him when he said, I don't have to be perfect. My B-plus game is good enough to win heading into a major championship. And so far, unfortunately, they haven't worked for him. So I don't really know what the winning formula is for him. I really don't. But I know he has incredible talent, and I feel like players will tell you this when he is on. He's probably right now, maybe outside Scottie Scheffler, and you can maybe throw Xander Schauffele in there now, maybe the toughest to beat when he's on. But there's something he has to mentally and emotionally get over, I think, for him to – I mean, we saw it down the stretch at Pinehurst. There's something he's got to fix there to win a major championship.
It's just amazing because for 68 holes at that U.S. Open, that is exactly what we've been waiting to see from Rory. Mm-hmm. You know, controlled play off the tee, smart shots into the green, tidy short game shots and clutch putting. He was making a rally in that final round. He was 4-under for the day heading into the late stages. Like, that was the round we wanted to see. We wanted to see Rory go out and take it. We wanted to see Rory go out and shoot 65-66 to capture a major championship, win the first one since 2014. The fact that he didn't in such spectacularly difficult fashion, missed the 2.5-footer on 16, and then the very difficult 4-footer on the 72nd hole. Like, I think that's going to linger. I made the point on the podcast on Sunday that I think if Rory had his druthers, if Rory had his way, he would take a long sabbatical at this point in the year to process what happened, formulate a game plan for what this next stage of his career could look like. I think it was that difficult of a loss. He always goes back to the 2011 Masters where he shot 80 in the final round when he had a 4-shot lead. He always goes back to the 2022 Open Championship where he shot 70, got lapped by Cam Smith on the final day. To me, I don't know how you cannot say that Pinehurst Open was not the most crushing and the most difficult of his career because he was so close. He done everything that he wanted to do, and it still wasn't enough.
The only thing I would say to that, if you want to go back to 2011 and he shot that terrible round in the final round of the Masters, what did he do at his next major start? He won the Open, U.S. Open, excuse me. So I want to believe that, I mean, Rory is a deep thinker. I want to believe, and maybe it was just too raw at the Open, I want to believe that you're going to learn more from your failures than your successes, and that he is going to understand. He's talked about it. He talked about the Scottish Open. You know, I lost my focus. I started watching what Bryson was doing instead of concentrating what I needed to do. I want to believe he's going to learn from that, and if he puts himself in that opportunity again, he's going to change his mindset, change his emotions, maybe his strategy, whatever, that can happen. He's been playing for too long to not learn from what happened at Pinehurst. So I hear what you're saying, but I think Rory is a good enough talent that I think he can learn from what happened at Pinehurst and use that to his advantage moving forward.
Yeah, he's certainly proven to be durable. Like you mentioned, 2011, he won his first major championship 2 months after that. Right. We talked about the 2022 Open the following month. He won the FedEx Cup title, the third time that he has done that in his career. Like, I still think he's going to have a great FedEx Cup playoffs. There's no reason to think that he wouldn't do so. I do think, though, as he formulates a game plan for 2025, there are some holes in his game that exist. There is sort of a volatility or a variability in his game that exists that doesn't exist in Scottie Scheffler's game, that doesn't exist in Xander Schauffele's game. And as much as we focused last week at Troon about Justin Rose and sort of the gap between major championships wins between Marion and what could have potentially been at the Open, Rory's looking at the same gap. we get to 2025. It would be 11 years. He would be historically resilient if he wins at Augusta National. No one has ever needed that many attempts to complete the final leg of the career Grand Slam. Rory is the gift that keeps on giving when it comes to content and predictions, because there is so much obvious talent, and yet there's so much scar tissue that he needs to sort of forge his way through as well.
All right, quickly then, beyond 2025, do you think Rory's going to win a major again?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Oh. He's still 35. He's in great shape. But I do think he has to work through it. I do think there are some changes that he needs to make. I'm not saying that he should blow it up and start all over again, but I do think there's some frailties in his game, particularly his iron play, that do need to be addressed.
That's a fair point.
Yeah. T. Lou, how about from a personal standpoint, as we wrap up this Golf Channel podcast with Breck Sandlav, what are the best parts of major championship coverage for you? What will stand out from what you're able to do in 2024?
Well, you mentioned after every major championship, and it depends on the timing. For like in the Masters, it happens after the press conference. For the other major championships, it's right as the player was handed the trophy. But talking to the winner after they have won, after they have achieved a lifelong goal, you know, I think standing out this year is Xander Schauffele. Talking to him at the PGA Championship, you kind of saw the, you know, you want to call it a monkey or whatever, you saw the burden just lift off of him. And, you know, talking to those players immediately, trying to, you know, have them relate to our viewers, their attitude and their emotions and the reality of fulfilling the dream. I think those moments always will stick out for me, because, you know, it's really cool watching someone work so hard and very in very difficult circumstances and trying to accomplish a dream and then fulfilling it. I think it's a great moment.
What's your process for doing those interviews? Because just seeing it behind the scenes, right? The player wins a major championship. Sometimes he's in the last group. Sometimes Xander Schauffele has to wait about 30 minutes for that to be finalized. Before he gets to you, Todd, he's doing a number of interviews, sometimes more than a half dozen interviews. What's your process for formulating the questions and evoking something different out of him that he hasn't already said over the previous stops?
Well, I'm fortunate. Outside of the Masters, I'm generally the third media outlet that the player comes to. But you're right, there's a ceremony, and usually he's asking questions in the ceremony, and then it's the network partner, and then it's the radio partner, and then it's me. I think I kind of have a formula. First off, it depends on what happens that day. If the guy made a birdie putt, like Xander Schauffele, when he made that birdie on 18 to win while Bryson was warming up, you know, you talk about the events that led up to that 18th hole and everything that you were thinking as a player, and how and the calmness or, you know, lack of calmness that you had playing that final hole. So you need to talk about the moments that just happened. But then you broaden out about, you know, again, I'll use Xander as an example. I'm going on memory here, but it seems as if you talk about the road and the close times that you've come, you know, how would you describe the fulfillment of getting this? And then, you know, then after that, you kind of push forward. So, you know, look at the athlete and what they do, but that's just kind of a foundation. Each player has just like each person has their own fingerprint. Each player is different, and you know them, we know them. But just like we talked about, you know, you just want to get the best out of that winner for the viewer, because, you know, frankly, they deserve it.
What do you want to see in 2025? What's your one wish?
I really am tired of talking about the PGA Tour and PIF.
for the 2025 major season. Keep in mind, Augusta, going to Augusta, we got Quail Hollow, we got Oakmont, we got Royal Portrush. What is your one wish for 2025? Yes, we're all sick and tired of the PGA Tour and PIF drama. None of us want to talk about that ever again.
You know, we haven't had a playoff in a while. I know, you know, that's a toxic word for some of us, you know, because like that extends our day and our, you know, depending. I'd like to see a great playoff. I don't care what major championship it is. I'd like to see a great playoff between two superstars down the stretch.
You almost had it. We were 4 feet from having it.
We almost did, but we haven't had in a while. But I would love to see that. I would, yeah, you're right. I would love it. Bryson and Rory in a playoff at Pinehurst, that'd be great. I would love to see, you know, guys going through 72 holes and then two, maybe a three. That'd be great. Three of the best players on the planet, or even throw some kind of wild card in there that nobody was counting on. That to me would be really cool. I would like to see a playoff in a major championship next year.
That's a great call. I have not thought about that, but you're exactly right. Like, it's been a number of years since the Masters. The PGA's got that three hole. We had that at Southern Hills with Justin Thomas and Will Zalatoris. We have not yet had.
I think that's the last hole.
Yeah, we have not had the two hole aggregate playoff at the U.S. Open yet. Haven't had a playoff at the Open Championship since Zach.
That's
in
right.
2015 at St. Andrews.
Yeah.
Great call. I'd love to see that as well. As long as it doesn't mess up my travel plans the next day. Like, I'm always fine with the playoff because it essentially distills everything we just witnessed over the past 72 holes into the playoff. Nothing really matters once you get that point. It's just head-to-head. I'm with you. As long as there's two megastars going head-to-head, I do think the drama will be immense. All right, T-Lou, this has been a lot of fun. Yeah. Appreciate you filling in for Rex. Whenever he wants to go on vacation with his wife, you are more than happy to sit in this seat. What do you have coming up next with your PGA Tour coverage?
Talking playoffs. I'm going to go to the Wyndham Championship, which is in my hometown at Greensboro. It's become a big event. Now the top 70 in the FedEx Cup standings make the playoffs, not 125. And then straight to Memphis. And that is equally a huge event because then we whittle it down to the top 50. You get to the signature events after that. I will take the BMW off and then in Atlanta for the Tour Champ.
Sounds like a busy schedule. I've got the BMW champion for a couple of days. I will not be at the Tour Championship. First time I've missed that in a number of years, going up to Connecticut and Stanford to co-host Golf Today with our buddy Damon Hacks. That's going to be a lot of fun. Cool. And then the President's Cup in Montreal, which will be great. Look forward to all of your coverage. You guys know where to find T-Lou, Todd Lewis, at Todd Lewis GC on Twitter. He's probably on Instagram as well, taking pictures and posting pictures of his adorable family. T-Lou, thank you so much for joining us. That is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. You guys know the drill. In the meantime, nbcsports.com/golf for all the latest news, notes, and updates from the 3M. Rex will presumably be back on Sunday night or Monday morning where we'll recap the 3M and all the happenings in Minnesota, as well as transition and look forward to what will be a very great competition at the Olympics, which of course you can find on NBC Sports and all of our associated channels. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days.